Welcome to Nerdities. Bitches.
Don't adjust your podcasts. This is a special edition. We're a little out of order of our regular schedule. But without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of appropriate ages, and Tiana, Nerdities proudly presents to you the Wrestling With Ourselves, home of the podcast and internet trios champions of the world. I am co-host of this show, numero uno in that trio, the alpha of alphas, the lord and master of the universe himself. Very important people call me Uncle Justin. And of course, I am rolling with the man, the myth, the legend, co-host of the show, my hetero life mate. He is the god of the dad bod, the king of chaos,
Kyle.
And rolling out that trio, not on the bottom, no, much closer in our hearts, like our little brother.
No.
He is the Van Damme of the body slam, the saint of cynics, the squishiest of the squish lords.
Vin Ender Wiggin. Johnson.
Bravo.
I'm practicing yoga right now.
Oh, not the movies you watched this week.
Yeah, I think that's been the gimmick. And now prepare yourselves, for your ears are about to be blessed with the sweet tones of the man who hails.
You may not talk.
You heard that? That's fun. Picked that up. Are you going to talk about wrestling?
It's great. I love that.
Talk about wrestling. If you want to talk about Disney, you got to wait for the main show.
Hails from parts well known. He is the mouth of the East. He is God's favorite atheist.
Mr. Madman Mike. See if that one sticks.
And of course, the Million Dollar Mensch, the oldest young boy in the history of professional wrestling.
Macho Man Joey Pravdo.
I love it.
Okay. Ooh, you gotta try the voice. You gotta try the voice. Can you do the voice?
Not really.
If he is the Million Dollar Mensch, can he do the Oy Vey instead?
Oy Vey.
Yeah.
It's a Shonda. I'm gonna come to your wrist and I'm gonna rip it off of my
hand. Gents. It was WrestleMania weekend. A lot of shenanigans went down. Because you would have thought another company was headlining a major event that weekend with the amount of times its name was said. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. First, a really good pay-per-view happened on Friday night. Ring of Honor, Super Card of Honor. We saw the first match on 0 Hour feature Josh Woods, Tony Nese, and Ari Daivari taking on Tony Deppen, Rhett Titus, and Adam Priest. It's a pretty decent match. The premier athletes defeated Titus, Deppen, and Priest. The Beast Mortis, formerly Black Taurus, took on Blake Christian in the second match of the night. Mortis used to be known as Taurus, as I said. So he will be familiar to some fans from previous ROH and AEW appearances. Blake Christian was given up a lot of weight, but didn't really have the usual speed advantage that comes along with being a smaller competitor because Mortos is so quick for a guy his size. He's a very big bull man.
Luchasaurus-esque.
Yes. Then we saw Angelico and Serpentico face Cole Carter and Griff Garrison. Maria Kanellis. Bennett is their valet or manager, momager. I guess that's what she calls them, her boys now. So I guess she's the momager. And she's still hot. Doesn't matter.
That sounds like a bad horror movie.
Yeah.
Like an Australian horror movie.
The momager?
Comes to your door with a book.
Decent tag match. And Garrison and Carter defeated SAP. The fourth and final bout on 0 Hour saw Mariah May in full Toni Storm cosplay take on Stardom's Kogo. Mariah May would defeat Kogo, and people would be very happy.
That was a four-match pay-per-view?
That was a four-match pre-show.
Oh, jeez, basis.
The main card saw Kyle Fletcher versus Lee Johnson for the TV title. Fletcher would retain his title. Really good match. Kyle Fletcher's a really good wrestler. Okay. Mei Sera, Mina Shirakawa, and Micah versus Tom Nakano, AZM, and Saya Kamitani. These were ladies from Stardom. And some of the some ROH peeps. It was a good mix-up. Team Shirakawa defeated Team AZM. Good match. Undisputed Kingdom versus the Infantry for the tag titles.
I always get Undisputed Kingdom mixed up with Animal Kingdom. Call back 10 minutes ago that you guys didn't hear.
Kyle, you can't see it, but Kyle's absolutely giggling it currently.
Yeah, with a piece of paper over my face.
Yeah, that's why I said we can't see it.
You look like a pretty princess.
He is a pretty princess. The Undisputed Kingdom would defeat the Infantry. Really good match. Good tag action here. Queen Aminata versus Billy Starks. Dude. Best match angle of the entire weekend happened in this match. So there's a point where Starks takes a big risk, missed the senton bomb in the apron. Aminata pounced on her and maintained control for a long time. Aminata countered another senton, and Starks immediately grabbed her neck and called for the ref. A scary moment unfolded as Starks was given a neck brace and helped to her feet. Dude, everybody thought this was legit. Everyone.
And that kind of sets it up, though. If you were given a neck brace, you wouldn't be helped to your feet.
Dude.
They would bring up...
She was telling them that she could stand. Right? Like, it... Well done. And as Aminata was holding up the ropes for her to, like, for them to help get her out, she grabs her and fucking hits her with a German suplex. And then she choked Aminata out to become the fucking TV champion. Dude, the crowd lost it. It was fantastic. It was a great heel move. Six-man open challenge. We saw the Bang Bang Gang. I fucking hate that name.
I love that name, just not for wrestling.
And they took on the team of Lance Archer, Alex Zane, the team known as Monster Sauce, with Minoru Suzuki.
Monster Sauce might be better than the Bang Bang Gang.
Yeah.
Bang Bang Gang is something you find on X videos.
Yeah. The Bang Bang Gang defeated Monster Suzuki Sauce. Is what we're calling him here. It was a really good match. It's unfortunate. I would have liked to seen the Monster Suzuki Sauce win the trios titles. Dalton Castle versus Johnny TV. Castle would defeat Johnny TV. It was an alright match.
This is a golden age for wrestler names.
Well, Johnny TV. He's the former Johnny Nitro.
Was this the match, Justin? Was this the match that had the stipulation? Or was that a previous match?
He had already lost the boys.
And Tom. He already lost the boys at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
Tom. That dude, Paul Walter Hauser, came out, though, dressed as a boy, and hit a spinebuster on Johnny TV to help Dalton Castle win.
Thanks. Does help me out with this? Does Johnny TV walk around dressed up like a cowboy?
No.
Okay. Think of something different then.
He just dressed like Johnny Nitro. How John Morrison is always dressed.
Yeah, so he was John Morrison and then took the name of every company slash show that he worked for.
Yeah.
So it was like John Morrison, Johnny Nitro, Johnny Impact. He was actually Was it Johnny Dynamite for a while?
Yeah, Johnny Bingo Hall.
That's a great name. Johnny VFW.
Yeah. Then we saw Athena take on Hikaru Shida for the ROH Women's title. Good match, man. Athena's so good. They need to put her back in AEW, especially with Mercedes there.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've liked her for a very long time, and I was really happy with how aggressive they let her be when she came over to AEW.
Have you caught any of the stuff she's been doing in ROH since they moved her over?
Not recently, but I did when they first moved her over. Yeah.
She's got Billy Starks as one of her minions.
That's wild.
During Billy Starks' press conference with Tony, she was like, she came out and she's like, yeah, I really made my boss proud and everything. And she looks at Tony, she's like, not you. Because she was talking about Athena. It was fucking great.
Yeah.
Eddie Kingston would defend his ROH world title against Mark Briscoe. Mark Briscoe would win the ROH title. And I believe it is 8 years to the date that his brother had won the title.
I think it was.
Great moment, man. Celebration, everything. It was good. It was really good wrestling. It was pure. It was nice. Now let's get into the dirt and filth of the weekend, shall we?
Well, hang on. So that means Kingston is now down from being a trios champion. He's now down to the one belt from New Japan, right?
Yes. During last week's lead-up to WrestleMania weekend, Ariel Helwani, who I personally have a grudge against because I think he's probably one of the most bought-out celebrity interviewers in the biz. And that's saying something because, like, WWE has Sam Roberts, right?
Yeah, Roberts.
They have him in his pocket. They have McAfee's a fucking announcer for him. Like, they got everybody, right? But just something about Ariel Helwani, especially because he had interviewed Tony Khan. He was trying to get Tony to answer questions about all the legal issues that he couldn't answer at the time. And then Helwani would go on, like, the next day and completely blast Khan.
Well, for the record, he had a very solid working relationship with AEW until he did that interview with MJF about his contract. And MJF started talking about stuff relating to his contract that he wasn't supposed to talk about. And Helwani aired an unedited version of the interview. And I think that's what started all the blowback from Tony Khan and kind of soured the relationship, and now he's just a WWE guy.
He's a fucking, yeah. He's a
monster. Yeah.
So last week he had a bunch of WWE wrestlers in, and the week started with CM Punk. And he and Punk started talking about Punk's time in AEW and the issues, and Punk was being Punk. And telling his side of the story and whatever, and like trying to play it up like he's not the one with all the issues, that it was because Tony wasn't a boss. He said Tony's a good guy, but he's just not a boss. And he completely like turned around on something he had said on a podcast with Colt Cabana when he left WWE the first time about how wrestlers should be paid equally and fairly, and now he's flip-flopping saying that, like, guaranteed pay for wrestlers is bad. No one wants to work hard enough to get money and yada, yada, yada. So, after that, Helwani has Jade Cargill on. And again, brings up AEW. So she makes some comments. The next day, he's got Cody Rhodes on. What's he do? Bring up AEW. Now, Cody, being Cody, was just like, yeah, I mean, that's Punk's experience. I never had that experience. I don't think that way. I think everything works fine there. It was a good time. Cody was just like, I need to just come back here and finish what I had started. And so he shut down Helwani's probing at AEW. Right? Good on Cody. Next day, he's got Josh Barnett. And Barnett was running his Bloodsport show this weekend, which also was good, but I didn't want to get into too much of that. There's a lot of cross-promotion going on there, different companies working together. It was a good show. But, like, Helwani tries to do the thing where he brings up AEW, and Barnett just shut him down, and it was kind of fucking great. Barnett's like, no, man, I had a great time working with Tony. I had a great time over there. I'd go back.
Now, as he's setting up these questions, is he doing it in a negative way or just what is your perspective?
He used everything that Punk said to set the rest of the questions for the week up. Then during one of the pre-shows with McAfee, Triple H was there and he had talked about, he was asked about wrestlers, free agents and stuff. And he shit on everybody that he had missed out on getting, pretty much, right? He didn't name names, but, threw the situations out there. He's like, you know, if you don't want to come here and you don't want to work this schedule and make this money, well, you know, I don't want you anyway. Meanwhile, that was a shot at Will Ospreay. Ospreay was offered money from them and more money from AEW and a lighter schedule. A lot of these guys might be young, but, Ospreay's been wrestling since he's, 16. If I come to you, Mike, and offer you a job cleaning carpets, but it's 2 days a week and three times the amount of money you're making now.
Well, it wasn't. Let's be fair. If it was 2 days a week, but you're making, 10% more than you're making.
An easy answer. Yeah. This is one of the things that I can't stand about the WWE environment. They've brainwashed people into thinking that pushing your body to this point is the only way you could do it. We need you guys to work dark matches constantly.
That's not just WWE though. That's the American work lifestyle, right? We have to have 5-6 day work weeks. We have to have 40 or more hours a week. You always need overtime. You always have to do this. You always have to, this country is a work-based society that's done nothing but work itself into the ground. And unfortunately, there's never anything to fucking show for it.
I will say, the advantages of working the AEW schedule are very apparent. But there are two advantages that, and I wouldn't even say they're advantages, there's just two things that I think are potential advantages to working a schedule closer to the one that the WWE has. The first thing is, it eliminates any potential ring rust that you might have, where if you're not on TV regularly, or you're wrestling dark matches, or you're only wrestling one match a month, or even less than that, the potential for you to not be on top of your game is a lot higher than it would be in a company like WWE. However, the other part of that is that, there's a school of thought that keeping your body working like that on a regular schedule is potentially eliminates higher-risk injuries, as long as you're not doing high-risk moves. You know what I mean? The fact that your body is constantly in that and you're not wrestling, taking time off, like the there are people who think that the breaks add more wear and tear to your body than just wrestling a consistent schedule. But I don't know what Triple H's schedule is for wrestlers now or what his intended schedule is for them in the future, but like, it's not wrestling 5 nights a week like it used to be.
Right.
Yeah.
If they could find a happy medium, then yeah. The mentality that they were espousing for a long time is, we need to get you guys in front of people and push the product. The product's got to be out there. We always need everyone to know the product. Okay, I can understand it. You work the shows that are broadcast. You maybe work a dark match a week. And then the rest of your time, you're doing interviews. You're doing shows. Like, you get a guest spot on a show. You're doing stuff to promote the business, to promote the company, where you're not getting physically brutalized constantly. It just doesn't make sense to do that job 5 days a week while traveling at the same time. It's insanity. It's a miracle more people aren't dying young, and a ridiculous amount of wrestlers die young. It's
Well,
an untenable system.
No, the other thing that I think it may or may not be like a personal preference thing to like a wrestler or the owner of a company or even a fan. But, like, I don't enjoy the old formula of wrestling dark matches during, like, in between days and then wrestling the same match on TV.
Right.
Because if you attended one of those house shows, the finish might be different, but the outcome of the match is ultimately going to be the same as what's on TV. Because they're basically working out the kinks during the week for a live broadcast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I understand why that formula may work, but I've always kind of hated it. And I also think it, like, kind of unfairly cranks the numbers up for, like, the number of defenses that people have had. If they're not a televised defense, so you know the title is never changing hands anyway, does it really count as a title defense? Stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, with the WWE schedule, like you're saying, they work the same match over and over again, so that when it comes time for that match to debut on Raw, or for that match to be the pay-per-view match that's coming up, right? It's super well polished. And yes, that's the WWE style. It's like, it looks like it's just a dance. And some people like that, right? I don't mind it, but I prefer AEW. It's more real, right? The guys getting in the ring on Dynamite didn't practice this shit all week. You know, it gives it more of an actual athletic, gritty feel. It's like, oh yeah, okay, it feels more like they're beating the shit out of each other than they are doing a dance they've practiced for the last month.
It might look a little more clunky at times.
Sure.
But there's something to be said about that in comparison to the slick,
right,
processed McDonald's wrestling that is WWE.
Right. And it's like, the WWE used to be like that back in the Attitude Era, right? It was, a lot of these guys were old school. They were calling shots in the ring. Even though they had the house show loops, they were still calling shit in the ring. It got to that, like, the new era, or whatever the fuck it's called, when they started doing the, all right, we're on the road the next 5 days, we're going to practice SmackDown's matches by having these matches on the fucking house show loop.
The ruthless aggression era?
Yeah, it was it, yeah.
And you'd hear a lot more back then about, okay, these guys who were having feuds wouldn't do the same match, but they'd be doing tag matches with other guys who were having feuds with another guy.
Right.
So you're in the ring together figuring out what works and what doesn't work.
Right.
And then when you have your one-on-one match, it's its own thing. And it's got elements of what you've practiced before.
Right.
Whereas now, based on what you're saying, they're doing stunt spectaculars during the week, and then the big one on the weekend or on Monday.
Yeah. So, like, someone in the vein of Will Ospreay, the man's been working his ass off for a long time, right? If the company came to me and I was Will Ospreay, and one company was offering $2 million and the other one was offering 3.5, but the company offering me 3.5 was I'm only working 1 to 2 days a week after working my ass off for the last 15, 20 years. Yeah, I'm taking the fucking more money, less work.
And you have more creative control.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It sounds better to me all around.
So anyways, this all happens. They all make their comments. And then on Sunday morning, it was announced that the Young Bucks are going to be showing the backstage footage from All In.
So you think Tony has had enough? And he's just like, you know what? Let's lay all the cards out.
It was verified that all this shit talking last week pushed Tony over the edge and was like, you know what? Fuck it. If Phil wants to get on national fucking radio and run his mouth, why don't we let everybody see what really went down? So, Wednesday on Dynamite, we're going to see the backstage footage from All In. And, like, the internet was all like, oh, it's fake. No, it is. Tony came out today and was like, oh, no, it's the footage.
So there are like thoughts about like the internet wrestling community has thoughts about why this is happening now and stuff like that. And I think maybe it's expedited the timeline, but I do think based on the stories that they seem to be moving towards, I do think that that's a thing that they were eventually intending on doing anyway.
Sure.
Just because of what they're doing with scapegoat Jed Perry.
Yes.
Now in New Japan, and how eventually he's going to make his way back into AEW, and the fact that the Young Bucks right now are basically playing the role of the power-hungry EVPs that they were portrayed as after the brawl-out incident. And the fact that they've got Kazuchika Okada with them now.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty formidable stable if Jack Perry comes back and joins them. Like, they immediately become, like, the biggest stable because Blackpool Combat Club's been falling off. They haven't really done much with the House of Black. Bang Bang Scissor Gang is not a thing anymore. It's just the Bang Bang Gang again. And they haven't really done a lot with them. And then what's the Undisputed Kingdom is just kind of like really floundering until Adam Cole comes back full time.
Yeah.
So those four have the potential to be like the big faction in the company when he comes back. So I think that was maybe kind of always the plan, was to show that footage and then have them come back. Because the Young Bucks did tease, I think they called him out in a promo last week.
They called him out on their way to the ring last week.
And that's what it was.
And then he, in his match over the weekend in New Japan, hit a bunch of their moves.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the story that they're telling, then it makes sense.
I don't.
But
here's my thing.
I don't know.
Even if it's not the story they're telling, Tony and the company has handled both incidents with Punk the way they should. Didn't talk about it. Here's your release. Don't talk about it. We're not talking about it. Yada yada yada. Right, and then Punk goes on. And he just starts spewing shit. And then Helwani doesn't help by just asking every fucker he had on that show about AEW. Bro, it is WrestleMania weekend. You are interviewing WWE talent. Why are you talking about the other company?
You know what?
You've been so long not even recognizing them.
Yeah. Like, why? Why? And then for all the fans, all the WWE fans, to sit there and be like, this is petty, this is bullshit. No, it's not. They kept their fucking mouth shut, and then they were pushed. Now you fucked around, you're going to find out. And then Helwani releases a statement yesterday. And he's like, you know, take this however you want. You know, I think Tony's a great guy. And like, what happens with Cody this weekend doesn't happen without AEW. Yeah, no shit. But don't drop that now after all week all you did was bury the fucking company. And now Phil and Paul Levesque are a little perturbed because this is going to hurt him. It's not going to paint him in a great light. If what they're saying, what their side of the story, what everybody else who was there that has leaked out information has stated, it makes Punk look bad.
Well, I mean, in Punk's own words in that interview, he basically told, even like leading up into the brawl out incident, basically when the stuff with the Young Bucks happened, he told Coney to take care of it, or he was going to take care of it. And basically, it was like the whole, you're not going to like the way that I take care of it if I have to take care of it. And then with Jack Perry, same thing. Like, Tony, you need to take care of this, or I'm going to take care of it, and you're not going to like the way I take care of it. But I don't remember who it was. If it was Sean Ross Sapp or somebody else, said the timeline for the Jack Perry thing was pretty ridiculous because it was like during the show, CM Punk came up and said, Tony, you better take care of this or I'm going to take care of it, and you're not going to like how I take care of it. And Tony had a headset
on headset.
Trying to run a show. Not even 10 minutes later that CM Punk was trying to choke out Jack Perry.
Not even just any show, Kyle. It was the biggest show in the company's fucking history to date.
Yeah.
Without question. And you tell him to take care of it while he's running the show. And Tony responds, yeah. What would you like me to do about it?
Yeah.
Like anybody would in this situation. Then Punk goes, and he goes, and these are his words. He goes, well, I didn't hit him. I just choked him out. I choked him a little. I did what any sane person would do, and I choked him a little. He goes, and then Samoa Joe was there, and he told me to stop.
So I, honestly, out of everything that could possibly come out of this footage, whatever Samoa Joe did in that situation is what I am most excited to see. Sure. Because if he handles it the way it is said that he handled it, I don't know how he can continue being a heel after this footage comes out.
I heard Joe said, fight me.
I mean, if that's true, I mean, I already really, really liked him a lot. Like, I've liked him a lot for a long time. But, man, if that's true, if that's what got him to stop, if he didn't tell him, you need to stop. If all he said was, fight me, and that's what got him to stop and walk away.
That's what I heard.
That would be incredible.
I heard he got in his face to get him to break the hole, and he was like, you want to fight? Fight me.
Yeah, I mean,
So for a second, I'm going to acknowledge my tribal chief. Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe.
Man, oh man.
Sweet tooth for him.
Yeah.
Look, cheap ratings pop or not, however you want to look at the situation, they were the dude that was backed in the corner for the longest time, and now they were forced to fucking fight. And fuck you. You brought it on yourself.
This is not a very good comparison, but what I keep thinking about in the last, like, week leading up to the situation is like, you remember when like 50 Cent and Eminem had the beef with Murder Inc.
Yes.
And you remember how much I didn't like Ja Rule because of everything that like went into that. Yeah. I never really liked him that much to begin with.
Yeah.
But then after that happened, so, I like really didn't like him anymore.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how I feel about the CM Punk situation with AEW, right? Like Chain Records didn't do anything to Murdang. They just like literally just kept quiet until Ja Rule started talking a little too much shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah. Then they had to answer back. I think
it's a fair analogy.
That's the closest thing that I can relate this to.
I think it's fair.
Because I never really liked CM Punk that much. Like, I liked him, sure. He was fine. But he was never, like, my favorite wrestler.
I love Punk.
And now he's, like, I don't even care about him anymore.
I love Punk. And then I started finding out when he was out of wrestling how much trouble he was while he was in wrestling. And for a guy like Bryan Danielson to have worked with him for so long in Ring of Honor and then in WWE and then in AEW and be one of the voices responsible for having him fired in AEW, I completely fucking understand Bryan Danielson. So yeah. That all happens. They do the response. And it is also WrestleMania weekend. So let's get into WrestleMania night one. The night starts with a head scratcher of a fucking match. Why this was number one on the card, I don't know. Especially when night one was absolute dog shit in comparison. This is like a Monday Night Raw card compared to the second night. We start the night with the Women's World Championship. Rhea Ripley defends her title against Becky Lynch. We would see Rhea defeat Becky Lynch to retain. Rumor has it that Becky Lynch's contract is up very shortly. She has not renewed. No one knows if she's going to. This was a good match. Next up was the Undisputed Tag Team Championship. This match really pissed me off. So, for the Undisputed titles, they're separating the titles. It's a ladder match, which means there's two sets of tag belts above the ring. Anybody clear on how a ladder match works?
Yeah.
You climb the ladder, you grab the title or the briefcase, match over. But now there's two.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
It's like, and whoever gets either one of the pairs wins both of them?
No. Nope. Both sets were up for grabs separately. You could, I guess, technically have gotten both. But yeah.
Four teams?
Involved? Six. Six teams.
Six teams. At least
yeah.
And that situation is so ridiculous that if I was booking it, I would have made it even more ridiculous in that each belt had to be removed individually, yes. And whoever removed the belt became one half of that tag team champion.
Yes.
So, like, the first two belts coming off are the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and then the third and fourth belts coming off are the Raw Tag Team Champions.
Yeah.
And so, like, any combination of people could wind up tag champions.
That would have been way better. All right, so the teams involved...
It wouldn't, but... It would have probably been equally bad to this.
Fun storytelling. That would have led to a lot of time where guys who don't want to work together are forced to. And that's fun storytelling to me.
Well, how I would do it, though, is I would split two tag teams.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
So, whatever. Yeah, like, New Day gets one Raw title and one SmackDown title. And then...
You need to have them.
So either they become a super staple... Or they have to unify the titles again, facing off against each other. I don't know. I just hate it.
Okay.
I hate it.
So we saw Judgment Day, who was the current Undisputed Tag Team Championship, the championship holders, Finn Balor and Damian Priest, versus my boys, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, DIY. The New Day, The Awesome Truth, Miz and R-Truth. The team of A-Town Down Under, which is Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. I hate both of them very much.
Two other good team.
They're just people I don't like. Like, it doesn't matter if they're heel and that's what their gimmick is. I just look at both of them and I want to punch them in the fucking throat.
That's why they're a good team.
And then the new Catch Republic, which is Tyler Bate and
Pete Dunne.
Yeah, I forgot they reverted his name again.
I would like an explanation for how the teams that ended up winning the titles in this match won the titles.
Sure.
It's like I'm looking at that and I'm like, so New Day is in there.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna, in a backwards way, tell you who won these titles, right? So New Day is in there, did not win the titles. DIY, Gargano and Ciampa did not win the titles, right?
Yeah.
And then you have Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate, who also didn't win the titles.
Okay. I don't want you
my
to.
My first three teams that I would have picked to win any of these titles did not win the titles.
I have to stop
you. And they had
you.
Two chances. They all had two chances. And none of them won.
I have to stop you. There's highlights of this match before I completely we shit on how it ended. Okay? For the longest time, Truth and Miz have been hanging out with DIY, and Truth has been calling them Shawn Michaels and Triple H DX. And they're like, no, it's DIY. And he's like, DX. They came out to an edited version of the DX entrance. So it was their team song, but it was like the lights went green and the X comes on and like, it was funny. They were in DX gear. It was great. The new Catch Republic comes out and they don't play the right entrance.
What?
Yeah. Yes.
It's a great song.
Somehow, they ended up playing the Awesome Truth entrance.
Oh my god.
Now, New Catch Republic was the last team out. So I don't
know. So they already played the Awesome Truth entrance once.
Yes. So I don't know if whoever was working the truck was playing by EPW rules. When it comes to setting up the music.
Yeah.
But it gave me flashbacks. All right. I'm going to go through this quickly. R-Truth's comedy spot had him mistaking the match for a traditional tag match. He got the hot tag from The Miz, took out Finn Balor with John Cena's moveset, tried to pin his opponent DIY, who made their entrance themed as DX, took out the champs with sweet chin music and an upgraded pedigree. DIY and Awesome Truth agreed to go for separate tag titles, incorporating the stipulation that each set of titles had to be retrieved separately. A-Town Down Under spoiled their plans before capturing the SmackDown tag team titles to become new champions. So they had knocked everybody out of the ring and then climbed really, really quick up the ladder. That's how they won. It makes sense. If you're going to have a ladder match with two sets of belts in it, the younger guys who have more energy and took out everybody in the ring... If you're both running up the ladder to get the belts, it makes sense, right? Because you're going to have a win early on. Fine. Not my choice, but fine. Their celebration was short-lived as New Catch Republic powerbombed Waller from the ring through a ladder laid out ringside. That was pretty brutal looking. The most visually stunning spot was Kofi Kingston's thrilling trust fall off the ladder. He did a coffin drop off the ladder that Darby Allin's done like a million times in AEW. New Day, Tip McDonough, JD McDonough came out to help Judgment Day. He got tipped off a ladder, flung forward through two tables. And then things were trending in an exciting direction, but it was completely derailed by issues late. Priest and The Miz blundered a climactic spot atop the ladder, possibly due to damaged equipment. Priest had to retrieve a new ladder, leading to the finish. R-Truth got some long-overdue revenge on Damian Priest, but took way too long milking the finish. It killed any tension left in the finale. Truth winning his first WrestleMania match elated fans, and the superstars deserve a standing ovation, putting their bodies on the line. Too bad the finish fell apart, and A-Town Down was an unpopular choice to win the SmackDown titles. Now, the Philly crowd the first night absolutely fucking sucked. And I don't care if it was an outdoor arena or not. They were just flat.
It's weird for a Philly crowd.
Until
top three crowd in the country.
They had moments throughout the night. But let me fucking tell you, one of the loudest moments was when A-Town Down won the fucking tag titles. Holy shit, was there booze.
Well, that's from Philly. Philly's going to let you know when they're not happy.
No shit.
Even on a bad night.
Before we move on to the rest of the card, because I don't want this to get lost, did you see what the follow-up was? The Raw after Mania on that storyline.
With the Judgment Day?
Yes.
Yes, it was a great segment.
Okay, so I just want to run through this real quick. So, Judgment Day comes out, and they're just doing their thing, and Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley, champions, they're out there together, whatever. They get interrupted by R-Truth, who just, sneaks up behind them in the ring and holds up his title, because it's back to the storyline where he thinks he's in the Judgment Day. And he asks them if The Miz, now being one half of his tag team champions, can join the Judgment Day. And then Miz comes out and says doesn't want to be in the Judgment Day. It sets up a match where it's going to be a tag match, but R-Truth says, but there's three of them, so they can't have a tag match, but there's not a third person. It's just R-Truth and The Miz. But R-Truth just says, there's a third guy here, and he points, and it's just air. He just points to air in the ring. And the Miz goes, if we're going to have a third partner, can at least be someone I can see? Fast forward to the match, the end of the night, whenever it was the end of the night. So it's a 3-on-3 match. And three quarters of the way through the match, John Cena comes out.
Yeah.
As the guy that they couldn't see.
Yeah.
That was their mystery. Was their mystery partner.
Truth goes.
That's tremendous.
Truth goes, yeah. And the third guy is the man you can't see. Yeah. And they're all like, what? And Miz goes, please, don't, are you talking about little Jimmy? And Truth's like, nah.
It was really good.
It was good.
And the payoff was fantastic, because the ending of the match was they all did that scoop slam thing that John Cena does. They all did the five knuckle shuffle. All three of them did a triple scoop, triple five knuckle shuffle, and a trip. So they called it a 15 knuckle shuffle.
Yeah.
The announcers, I think it was Pat. Was it Pat? And then they all did what, the FU? Is that still what it's called? The attitude adjustment?
The attitude adjustment, yeah.
Yeah, so and then they did all three attitude adjustments, and they all covered at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was a nice, but...
It's a good follow-up. It's fine. All right.
Definitely the best follow-up to Mania out of any of the matches.
Sure. We'll get to that. Rey Mysterio and Andrade versus Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. It's good. It's a good match. Rey can still go. Jason Kelsey came out in an Eagles luchador mask along with Lane Johnson. And they helped, Rey win. Then Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso, a match that I was really looking forward to, was a fucking letdown.
Yeah, I heard it wasn't very good.
It was not great. Jimmy would defeat Jey via pinfall. Jey would defeat Jimmy. Then we had Bianca Belair, Naomi, and Jade Cargill versus Damage Control, the team of Asuka, Kairi Sane, and Dakota Kai. This was okay. It's all right. Jade Cargill's big debut to shine, teaming up with Bianca and Naomi. It's fine.
Did she look noticeably different?
No.
Not physically, but her in-ring ability? Ring?
No. Not at all. Nor was the match she had on Raw where she squashed someone last night. The same Jade is the same stuff. Don't sit there and say she was off TV for training purposes. She was off TV because you didn't have a spot for her right away. Because she was being trained by fucking Bryan Danielson. Fuck you, Paul. Name me someone on your fucking crew that's a better wrestler than him. I'll wait. There's not.
Good point.
If they can't figure out a way in the next year to get her versus Rhea Ripley for the championship, they have squandered her potential.
They might try. The problem is, physically, she's a beast, right? But
Ripley's a beast, too. They look very well matched.
But Jade's still greener than goose shit. There was a reason that she had her own little pocket dimension in AEW, and she had never mingled with anybody in the higher up storylines. It's because she ain't been doing it long.
They've pushed worse talent.
And it's always failed. Cargill, Blair, and Naomi would defeat Damage Control. It's all right. Match of the weekend, probably, coming up. Intercontinental Championship. Gunther defended his title versus Sami Zayn. Emotional. Just a great wrestling match. Zayn would hit the El Generico Top Rope Brainbuster for the peeps. Best match of the weekend in WWE. Easy.
But this, the results of this match, although, like, I'm not mad about it, I'm confused about it, because what do they do with Gunther now?
He's going to move on to the world title. They'll take him off TV for a little bit, he'll come back, and he'll be a challenger for either world champion. They're doing the draft soon anyway, so we'll see where everybody lands. In the main event of the night, which, in my opinion, should have been the match that opened the fucking night, and you should have main evented with the women's match, but whatever. Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins versus The Rock and Roman Reigns. I shit you not. 23 and a half fucking minutes worth of just entrances.
Cody's is long.
So The Rock had his new special one. Rock had a new special one. There was fire, there was lightning, blah, blah, blah. Roman, on average, takes 8 to 10 minutes to get to the fucking ring. So that was long. Seth. Cody. We were 30 minutes into the main event, and they just started taking off their entrance gear. James and I were like, what the shit? Fun James moment during WrestleMania. Earlier in the tag match when R-Truth was doing his thing, I said, hey James, how old do you think R-Truth is? He's like, oh, easy, like mid-30s, maybe 40. I was like, you would think that, right? He goes, yeah. I was like, he looks super young, right? He goes, yeah. I go, R-Truth's 51. And he goes, what? I was like, yeah.
He's looked the same for 25 years.
He really has.
I mean, there is a part of me that if they were going to do a tag team reunion at WrestleMania, given that Cody was going to win the title, there is a part of me that wishes that Dustin went back there.
Dustin was there.
And Golden Truth was the tag team that was on WrestleMania instead of Awesome Truth.
So, main event. They do the wrestling. It's nice to see The Rock in a pretty lengthy match. He looked great. Not just like, you know, it's The Rock. Of course, he's in great shape. I mean, in ring shape. He looked great. He had slimmed down. He wasn't blown up. He was doing really good. Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun match to watch. The Rock and Roman would win, which set up for the bloodline rules for the main event for Sunday night. I will say this. I don't think Mania has to be two nights at all. But it was nice watching two consecutive pay-per-views that ended. Saturday night ended at 11. Sunday night would end, like, the ding, 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 at 10:30. So it was nice.
Smart, yeah.
All right, night two. We would start the night with the World Heavyweight Championship. Seth Rollins would defend his title against Drew McIntyre. Now, I hate in wrestling when someone gets their ass whooped and then, like, at a pay-per-view real bad, and the next night on Raw, they're like, oh, I'm cool. Everything's fine. And then when you take a beating like Cody and Seth did Saturday night, and Seth comes out like there ain't a fucking problem in his world on Sunday, aggravated. Because Seth should have easily just gotten dropped by Drew McIntyre. Should have been a squash match to start the fucking pay-per-view for Drew to win the title. Right?
And then you have an actual match following it up with what they did.
Sure. So they have a back and forth match, as I guess they decided that's the way it should be, even though it's stupid. It was good. Drew wins. Drew goes over to Punk, who's on commentary for the match, and he's just, you know, flapping his lips. You can't see what Drew's saying, or you can't hear it, which was kind of pissing me off. And then all of a sudden Punk would, you know, Drew would stand and Punk would, like, take his legs out from underneath him, and he took off his brace and smashed Drew in the face. And then all of a sudden Damian Priest's music hits and he comes running out and he cashes in the fucking Money in the Bank and wins the title. Now, there's some thoughts here. Clearly, yes, it's to set up a match between McIntyre and Punk, because, you know, that's what they've been building towards. There's also, Drew's contract is up. And as far as anyone knows, the last offer that was given to him, he put back. He was like, no thanks. So, that could be a reason that he didn't hold the title. So, that happens. Damian Priest celebrates. Judgment Day comes out up the rampway. It's all like, yay! Da, 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 da. Then we had... The Final Testament, Karrion Kross and the Authors of Pain... versus Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits in a Philadelphia street fight. This match should have been on night one if they were going to build cards that clearly weren't close to each other and, like, you know, marquee matches. I didn't really pay attention to this match because I didn't give two shits. But we would see Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits would win. They had Snoop Dogg on commentary. And they would have the man who says he's the most biased voice in fucking wrestling podcasting, Bubba Ray Dudley, would show up as a fucking referee. So there was a moment where he helps out Lashley and the Street Profits. They do a what's up. They get tables. It's a fun little thing.
Nostalgia.
It was dumb. Then we had LA Knight versus AJ Styles. LA Knight would beat AJ Styles. It's a good match. AJ makes everybody look good because he's AJ Styles. AJ had new entrance music, so it kind of sucked that it debuted a new entrance and then would subsequently get his ass whooped. The United States Championship match happened. Logan Paul defended his title versus Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. Fun thing here. So Logan Paul makes his entrance first. Out comes Orton, and as Orton's doing his thing about to go down the ramp, Owens comes out with his entrance, and he's driving a golf cart. And he goes down the ramp and then puts it in reverse, backs up and picks up Randy Orton. And then him and Orton drive down to the ring and proceed to beat the shit out of Logan Paul together for a solid 5-10 minutes of the match. And then they realize, oh fuck, it's a triple threat match. And then they finally start wrestling each other.
At least they gave the fans what they want.
Yeah, until Logan Paul would defeat both of them to retain his title. Then the WWE Women's Championship match, Io Shirai would defend her title against Bayley. Bayley got the win. Great match. Good for Bayley. I'm happy for her. Sucked that Paramore wasn't available to do her entrance, but hey. Maybe next year.
What state fair are they playing at?
Stadium tours, bro. Undisputed WWE Universal Championship, Roman Reigns would defend his title against Cody Rhodes in a Bloodline rules match. Which means anything goes for the Bloodline. They had a good back and forth. The fight spilled out in the crowd with the pair brawling before Rhodes hit a suplex on an equipment platform. After getting back to the ring, Reigns countered a disaster kick into a powerbomb. From there, the match slowed a bit, with Reigns largely taking over the ring until both men were simultaneously dropped by clotheslines. Rhodes made a big comeback, culminating in a power slam and a disaster kick for a two count. Rhodes came back by hitting Roman came back by hitting Cody with his own crossroads for a near fall. And after Cody kicks out, Roman looks at the camera and goes, "That move sucks." Reigns would hit a low blow and a powerbomb through the commentary desk, throwing Rhodes back into the ring and connecting with a Superman punch for another near fall. A Cody cutter moments later got Rhodes his 1-2 count. Rhodes also hit a spear for another 2 count. After the spear, Rhodes hit a crossroads before going for a second, only to be kicked by Jimmy Uso. Reigns hit a Superman punch, but Jey Uso ran down, battling with his twin brother before spearing him off the entrance ramp. That was a hell of a spear. That was a big fall. Rhodes drove Reigns out of the ring to break a guillotine choke and speared Reigns through the ringside barricade. Rhodes hit Crossroads twice, but was hit by a Samoan spike from Solo Sikoa. As he went for a third, Sikoa dragged Reigns on top of Rhodes, but Rhodes again managed to kick out. Reigns and Sikoa hit a combination spear and Samoan spike, but Rhodes managed to kick out yet again before John Cena's music hit and he ran to the ring, knocking Sikoa from the ring and hitting Reigns with an attitude adjustment. Cena then put Sikoa through the Spanish commentary desk, which brought out The Rock. The Rock ducked a Cena punch and delivered a rock bottom. As Rock took a weight belt off and waited to hit Rhodes, the Shield music hit, and Seth Rollins attempted to slide in the ring with a chair, but was hit by Reigns' Superman punch. Before Rock could do anything further, the Undertaker's gong sounded, and the lights cut out. When they came back on, Undertaker was standing behind Rock, American Badass Taker, and delivered a chokeslam before disappearing after the lights went back out. Rather than attacking Rhodes, Reigns struck Rollins in the back with a chair. Rhodes countered a spear with a kick and delivered a trio of crossroads before a 3 count to win the championship.
I saw the clip with the Undertaker moment.
Yeah.
And couldn't help but wonder, did I miss something that they set up? Or was this just random pop attempt? Because that's what it felt like. Like, there seems like no reason for him to be there.
No. So, I think what they wanted was Austin. But Steve came back, did his thing with Owens last year, and was like, it was great. Maybe I'd do something again. I don't know. But more than likely, no. I've been out of the game this long. Like, it takes a lot to get back into ring shape, even just for small moments. And I think when he did that thing at Mania a few years back and he like dislocated his shoulder from hitting one stunner, I think since that point he's just like, I really don't want to do it if I don't have to. I don't need to. Like, I'm fucking loaded. I was smart. I saved my money. I have my big fucking ranch that I have, like, cattle and shit. I've got my beer contracts. I don't need it. So he doesn't do it.
Taker just seems forced. I know there's not a lot of guys left from that prime era. Like, you couldn't pull Triple H out. He obviously physically can't do it. But if there was anybody that would make sense to go into that ring, it's Austin or Triple H.
Sure.
Those three guys had the biggest moments together. If you can't get either one of those, I don't understand getting Undertaker out.
If you believed the fucking WWE nerds, they thought MJF was going to do it. Because somehow MJF signed a contract with WWE. Even though most of us know that MJF signed a contract extension with Tony about a year ago. But hey, whatever. So it was fine. The Undertaker thing was weird. The Rock was great at the night before. Every time the ref would like try to be a ref towards Cody and Seth, The Rock was like, stand in the fucking corner. I'm your boss. I'm on the board. Like, he was throwing his weight around like that. It was fucking epic. He did the same thing that night. He hits Cena with the rock bottom, and he looks at him, and he goes, get in the fucking back.
I do not care about dropping bombs these days.
No, it's great.
I do like the fact that, like, apparently his strategy is, so this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to curse at this point, at these points, so the live audience can hear the cursing, but it's going to be edited for TV.
Like, not
well, it was a lot of paper. It was a paper.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Yeah, so that the Taker thing I do think was weird. Like, they teased Cena leading up to it, but, yeah, there was two quick things that I wanted to talk about. The first one, you brought up Bully Ray earlier.
Yeah.
So a thing that he said, I think it was like within the last week, he made the comment about Kenny Omega specifically going to WWE to wrestle Randy Orton so that he could learn things from Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Like, only doing something once to make it more meaningful. And Kenny's response to that was basically, I have no doubt that I would have learned a lot from being in the ring with Randy Orton. He's an excellent, basically he was like,
yeah,
he's an excellent wrestler, and I learn something every time I wrestle in front of people.
Yeah.
So,
classy.
I have no doubt that I would have learned something from Randy Orton.
Kenny had a very classy response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn it, I can't remember the other thing that I wanted to talk about. It was something to do with,
Was it the, he has no bias to any company? Because that's the one that's been thrown in his face the most over the last, like, 24 hours.
No. It had to do with, it was like a follow-up to Mania thing. Oh, Cody and The Rock. The follow-up to Mania with Cody and The Rock, where Cody comes out as a champion, The Rock comes out. They let each other hold each other's belts.
It was, if you watched the whole segment, it was really good.
Yeah.
It sets up for a future thing with him and The Rock.
Yes. But what I really wanted to get was from you was, do you have any thoughts on the potential of what it was that The Rock gave to Cody? Because he said he had a gift for Cody and it was something small enough to fit in his hand. I basically passed it to Cody without the camera being able to see what it was.
I've heard three things. Two of them are...
Well, the internet was very fun with what it could possibly have been.
Two of them were, honest to goodness, like, great answers. The third one is fucking hilarious. So the first thing I heard was it was one of the beads from Roman's lei.
Okay.
So the new head of the table. The second one I heard was it was an item given to The Rock from Dusty.
That was my assumption, but I didn't know what specifically it could be.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I also heard that, I don't know how true it is, but Tony Khan or Nick Khan and Triple H hunted down the Rolex that Dusty sold in order to get Cody acting lessons.
That's been confirmed that he got that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fucking, that's nice. Like, that's awesome. The third thing I heard, which made me crack the fuck up, was it was reported that I think it was Friday night, Cody's bust lit on fire. So what The Rock handed Cody was the lighter.
Wow. That's pretty funny.
But we need to, I think, wrap it up there. We're over an hour. We're losing Vin and Joe, and we still have another show to do.
All right. Well, as always, if you like what you hear, you can like us on Facebook.com/NerdEase. Follow us on Twitter @NerdEase. Email us at NerdEase@gmail.com and check out NerdEase.com.
While you're there, kindly, go fuck yourself. And then head over to tpublic.com, search NerdEase, and get some sweet shirts, whatever other things, the phone cases and whatnot. And then go to sinfulcreationsbyjustin.com and fill the deep, sad void in your heart. And then, yep. I made it easy for you, Joe. You were falling asleep. Oh, Joe. Joe, you don't have audio.
Mute. There we go.
Yay.
Head over to youtube.com/nerdities. Rock bottom that bell and give that subscribe button the Stone Cold Stunner.
I'd like to give it, I'd like for people to give the subscribe button the old two knuckle shuffle, but hey, whatevs.
Because a whole lot of new content is coming, including Nerd ETs, our cooking show. We got the final installment of the Joe trilogy. We have some shorts. We have some holiday specials. We have a feature film. If you want to give us money for this stuff, please give us money. NerdEase@gmail.com. We'll croon. We'll swoon. We'll talk about your business and or products.
Suck a dick.
If it is the Nerdy Crew, you know, I can post it. I would only be far more someone to get the next show. Woo,
boy.
Because of the end of civilization, the Clamp Cable Network now leaves the air. We hope you have enjoyed our programming, but more importantly, we hope you have enjoyed life.